Good morning. Thanks for weathering the time change and joining us so early on this Sunday morning at South by Southwest. My name is Heath Rowe, and I'm a research manager for DoubleClick, which is an online ad serving company based in New York. And the work that I do for DoubleClick is primarily along three lines. I do market and competitive intelligence, so keeping tabs of the online marketing industry to figure out what mergers and acquisitions, new products and services, et cetera, might affect our business. But I also spend a lot of time thinking about emerging media and new technologies and what negative or positive impact advertising might have on those technologies. One of the questions that I've grappled with, I've only been there about a year and 3 months, 4 months, and one of the things that struck me relatively early on was that DoubleClick does a really good job working with medium and large-sized publishers. We've got a lot of premium brands. We focus on display, mobile, and search, but we don't really do a lot for smaller publishers. And so as a blogger, I've been blogging since about 2001 when I first met Evan Williams, and I'm a horrible advertiser as a blogger. I don't make money on my site. The ads I have put on my blog go untended. I think I still have a Hurricane Katrina PSA at the top of my blog, Media Diet. And so I was thinking about, you know, as a blogger, I don't have a lot of time to work on it full time because I'm not doing it professionally, but there's got to be things that people do to do it well. And what better way to learn those things than to moderate a panel on that very topic at South by Southwest? So a lot of this is purely selfish, and for that, I apologize. Couple housekeeping things before we start. This panel is called Online Advertising for Newbies, but we're going to talk about this more broadly in terms of monetization for blogging and small publishers, and we're going to think about online ads within a broader context of affiliate marketing, search campaigns, display campaigns, sponsorship programs, and other ways that small publishers can monetize their site. And this panel is kind of categorized in the intermediate track because we assume that the audience has some foreknowledge of blogging, or if you're a small publisher publishing online. And so to that end, I just want to ask a couple of questions so we can level set the room. How many of the people in the room are bloggers? If you're a blogger, raise your hand. Okay, that's probably about a fifth. And how many would categorize yourself as a small publisher? Okay, that's about maybe a sixth or a seventh. Could someone just shout out what the other might be? Who else do we have in the room? Pardon? Okay. X Nielsen? Okay. Okay, that's helpful. And then just in terms of helping us set the levels in terms of your experience, how many people would say that they're total newcomers to online advertising or monetizing their sites or blogs? And how many people have some experience but just want to learn more? And then how many people don't realize they're at the online advertising for newbies panel? Okay, that's great. So that's that. So I'm going to introduce people, and then we're not going to like give our positions person by person. I'm just going to ask them questions, and we're going to ask each other questions, and I encourage you to ask us questions as well. Most panels tend to save that for the end of the panel. I'm going to encourage you guys, if you have a question midstream, please go to the mic in the center so we can get it on the podcast, but we don't necessarily need to wait until the end. And if your question is particularly urgent, given the immediate context, there are ways that you can let us know that. And I think you know what they might be. So to introduce the panels in no particular order other than the order they're in this packet I prepared, we've got Darren Rouse, two to my left, two to your right. He's a full-time blogger. He's the blogger behind ProBlogger. And ProBlogger is a blog that helps bloggers make money blogging. And he's going to be coming out with a book in April, so just next month, Wiley's going to be publishing his new book, which is called ProBlogger, Secrets for Blogging Your Way to a Six-Figure Income, and I invited him to participate for kind of the broader contextual how to become a professional blogger in writ large. To my immediate left, your immediate right, I've got Wendy Pearsall. She's the founder of eMoms at Home, which is an internet home business magazine for moms and dads. Founded in 2006, and she's got an interesting story in terms of how her business kind of took over her blog, I guess is the best way to put it. And I invited her kind of for the individual blogger perspective, someone who's currently working to monetize just not her site, but a network of affiliated sites and the experiences and lessons that she's had in that arena. Thirdly, we've got Jim Benton, which is three down to my left. And he is VP of sales for Adbrite. He's been there since 2004, and he's responsible for developing their advertising sales team, growing AdBright's network of sites, and driving their online marketing and acquisition efforts. And he's got a pretty long-running experience in the interactive industry, including working for Evite, IAC, Interactive Corp, and other companies. And so he's going to bring kind of a longer experience than I have, but also an ad network specific experience in terms of how they work with their publishing partners and what they've learned about newcomers in particular. And then lastly, but not leastly, at the end of the table, we have Rhett Clevenger, who's the online media manager for Backcountry.com, which is a really great kind of gear e-commerce site. They've got a number of sites within their company, and he focuses on online marketing for Backcountry, including their affiliate marketing program. And so I invited him to kind of contextualize affiliate marketing as another way to monetize a small publisher or blogger site in addition to online ads. So that's who we are. I'm going to ask some questions, and we'll see how this goes. So one of the things I realized in starting to think about this is that ads are just one piece of the kind of monetization pie for blogs. And Darren, I'm wondering if you could kind of walk through what you see as all the different ways that someone could make money on their site, and then if you dare kind of prioritize maybe your either personal experience in terms of degrees of success or just kind of how the mix might play out for the people that you work with.
The way I tend to look at monetizing a blog, I divide it into two areas. You can either make money from your blog directly using an advertising program or an affiliate program, or you can make money indirectly because of your blog through selling yourself in some way. So I'll talk just briefly about those two types. So direct ways of making money from your blog, probably the most common one that bloggers are using is advertising, particularly cost per click contextual advertising like Google's AdSense program. Every time I survey readers on ProBlogger, that's the biggest one that they're making money from. So that's where most bloggers would start. They would often also start with an affiliate program like Amazon, where you refer someone to Amazon, you make a small commission on any sale. So they're two of the sort of entry-level things that a lot of bloggers are experimenting with. In the advertising field, there's a whole heap of different types of advertising. As your blog grows, it quite often will begin to be approached directly by advertisers or ad agencies. So selling that sort of display advertising can be another one. Sponsorships. At the moment on ProBlogger, I've just sold a premium sponsorship. So you see a banner at the top of the ad, the blog, another one lower down. They buy that for a month on that. So they're aligning their brand with my brand, if you like. Pop-up ads, RSS advertising, putting little ads in the RSS feed on your blog is something that a lot of bloggers have struggled to actually see results from, but we're seeing some new products emerging in that space as well. Selling of text links, although Google doesn't really like that, so you run a bit of a risk there of being penalized. Which a lot of bloggers went into recently. So there's sort of some of the advertising. Then you've got affiliate programs. Some bloggers are beginning to experiment with writing reviews for being paid for that. There's a lot of debate around whether that's a good thing or not, and I'm happy to take some questions on that if you want. Selling classifieds, so job boards, for instance, on ProBlogger. Again, I'll use my own example. And a lot of blogs at the moment, they're selling space for advertisers looking for employees on a month-long basis. Selling merchandise, taking donations or tips, something that doesn't really work that well for most bloggers, but there are a couple of bloggers out there who've made a full-time living off the donations that their readers give them. Membership areas, so selling sort of secret extra bonus areas on your blogs. They're some of the direct ways that you can make money directly from your blog. Indirectly, or making money because of your blog might be being able to sell yourself as a consultant, landing a book deal, selling a product, selling training or workshops, launching having a conference, and making money as a result of that. So there's some of the more indirect ways. In terms of what works, I guess the message I'll say over and over again today is every blog is completely different. I've worked on 30 blogs of my own, and co-own a network of 315 blogs, and every single blog monetizes very differently. So it's about experimenting. But I guess the entry-level ways is AdSense. Some of those sort of ad networks are quite easy to begin to experiment with, and Amazon to get a taste for some affiliate stuff as well. So there's some of the entry stuff.
Okay. So, Wendy, when you first, I mean, as prelude, before you answer, I'd love you to tell your story about how your business took over your blog, because I think that's an interesting kind of shift in your thinking. But when you started thinking about monetizing the blog, when you saw that the blog had more potential, or the business through the blog, how did you think through, I mean, that's a lot of choices. How did you think through what to start with, how to go about doing it? How did you make those decisions?
Actually, that's... I really think that that's a really wide spectrum, and I hope I can give you a concise answer to that, because I really started my blog as a way to document a startup that I was working on from home. And it was my third startup from home, so I thought, you know, I probably know a thing or two about working from home. There might be another mom or two out there who might be interested in what I have to say. Well, it, literally, like less than 3 months later, the blog became the startup, and I scrapped my other idea. And honestly, it was probably a defining moment when Darren linked to my blog, and I just kind of sat there and watched my stats all day. And that link actually kind of really put me on the map. And then I kind of went, oh, crap, now what do I do? Because I don't know how to make money off a blog. And Darren and I got to know each other real well at that point, because I spent a lot of time over there learning from him. And what I really realized was that, you know, I didn't have the traffic at that point to monetize it the way, you know, a lot of his articles had talked about. So I, you know, well, I'm a business coach. I'm a life coach. I'll sell myself as a coach. But that really wasn't my end goal. But it was a very successful way to sell myself. And I really, you know, very quickly, and I actually tell people this a lot, is that if you're a very small publisher just starting out and you have consulting services to sell, I really felt like that was the fastest, easiest way to get revenue off my blog. But it really wasn't my goal. My goal was to make money off the traffic. So I moved to trying to build it to that level where I could do that. And then just last fall, just kind of realized that I couldn't do that on my own. I could not write any more posts. I could not respond to any more comments. I could not start another blog. I just couldn't do it anymore. So I made the shift from being a one-woman show to a blog network on my site, and I added 7 blogs to eMoms at Home. And to Darren's point of each blog monetizing differently, I knew that in theory. I was wholly unprepared in practice for what that meant. And I really probably didn't sleep or eat for a month in September after we launched, where I kind of went, holy cow, these blogs are really different. And I really don't know how to grow these blogs in different niches. You know, now I've, to the point where I'm comfortable adding blogs again, and I know that they're going to be growing differently. And I'm ready for that kind of, you know, learning curve once again. But to that point, you know, each blog is not only growing differently, it needs to be monetized differently, but they're getting traffic from different sources. We have a kids activities blog that has 80 to 90% traffic from search engines. We have a dad work-life balance blog that gets no traffic from search engines, because we know dads, they don't look for information about work-life balance. So, you know, how do you make money off of these two things? Because people from search engines click on ads and look for information differently than people who become very, very loyal readers. And I think that can kind of be summed up concisely with something that I learned from a conference that I went to last year, Elite Retreat, is that when you create compelling, sticky content, people come and they want to read the content. They want to learn about you. They want to connect with you. They want to come and hang out. But they don't want to click on ads. They're there for you. They're there for your content. But if you just create okay content that is written to serve the purpose of sending someone somewhere else to click on an ad or make a purchase, you know, it's not, you know, what we like to hang our hats on and say, yeah, this is great content. But guess what? It makes you more money sometimes. But it really depends on, again, your goals for the blog. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I have a follow-up question. Tell me a little bit about your experience working with the various ad networks that you do work with. Because you have ads on the site. And how did you choose who to work with, and how's that been going?
That is a great question, because I've experimented with a lot. I've done a lot of affiliate advertising. have sold some advertising directly, which I found was a lot more work than I realized. You have to have your own ad server. You have to have a rate card. You have to be a true salesperson. And I mean, you have to know what you're talking about. CPMs, how they're going to convert it to the side, that whole thing. I'm still able, and I like to do that because it's the most profitable. But you know, even at the level that I am, you know, big advertisers like you to have a million page views a month before they even look at you. And you know, I'm big for the blogosphere. I'm small for them. So that's really not an avenue that I can go down. So my bread and butter these days is our ad network. And I love my ad network, and I you know, my ad work has some growing pains too. It's Real Girls Media, where they're kind of starting out, you know, and in some months they sell really great ads. I mean, they act kind of as a broker. I know you're going to talk a little bit about how different ad networks can work in different ways. They really truly rep my site. I mean, they put my site in their proposals when they're going out and they're pitching big brands like Disney and JCPenney and Pam. And, you know, that's great because I'm getting my name in front of those brands. But when those brands don't buy, we're running their backfill, which means that, you know, we're getting half of a half of a half of a half of commission, which can be a little frustrating because I never really know, you know, where that income level is going to be. So we really have to supplement those things. And that's where I rely on what I've learned from Darren is that, you know, how can we sell text links and still be Google compliant? How can I help my authors, you know, make more money off of affiliate advertising, even if their blog isn't really, you know, built for affiliate advertising? You can still do it, but, you know, let's work on that kind of thing. So you really have to, if you're going to get at that level where you only want to make money from ads, you really have to diversify what you're doing. You can't just rely on any one means, because I used to make a lot of money off of text ads, and that money's gone now. And I'd be out of business now if I had relied on that income.
Okay. Well, let's shift them to Jim. AdBright's relatively large network. What are some of the things, kind of a two-sided question, how do you work with newcomers to the network in terms of getting them up to speed and making sure they do the right things in the right way? But also, kind of the flip side of that would be when someone is choosing an ad network, because there are so many available, what are the things that they should consider to make sure that they're picking the right place or places to be?
Sure. Good morning. So our role as an ad network is to be a single point of contact as we go out to advertisers to represent your sites. I think in terms of the blog community and news sites, at all different stages, there's different needs. So, you know, the roots of AdBright, we're from a blogger. Our founder, Philip Kaplan, many of you guys probably know him, started AdBright, and he had a blog, and he had a lot of people emailing him. Once he hit sort of a critical mass, a lot of people started emailing him saying, I'd like to buy an ad, and how much would it cost, and you know, what sizes do you have, and how can I get reporting? And so what he did is he wrote a simple little piece of code that said, your ad here. And today on many of your blogs, I see advertise here or your ad here, and it goes to one of your internal systems that you've created. But he wrote a system that essentially said, you're right here, you can click on it, buy an ad with their credit card. And then it had one additional piece, sent him an email anywhere he was in the world to review the ad and click approve or reject. So as an early kind of blogger, that was an automated way of serving the ads and doing customer service and billing. So I think, you know, AdBright today, we serve ads on over 50,000 sites and other ad networks. Similar story. It's all about aggregation and scale. I think one of the decisions that you all have in the beginning is it all about money or is it about control? A lot of the blogs we work with make a few dollars a day and they really enjoy writing, you know, what they're talking about. But I think in the beginning, it's a lot more about the control and seeing what type of ads are on your site. So what I would recommend is, you know, go out there and find the ad networks that give you the control to view the ads that will run on your site and to choose the ads that will run on your site, to set your pricing and to tell your own story. I would not go with a blind network necessarily. And number two, look for a network that will have transparency so that the advertisers will see that they're running on your site. It's important that if your site is doing the heavy lifting and converting well, that the advertisers running through the network can see, wow, I'm having a higher level of conversions on this individual, you know, mom site or this individual music site, and they will pay more for that site through transparency. One other thing that we look at today, you know, we try to open up the doors to pretty much all websites. We bring in about 1,000 a day, and similar story with other ad networks. The key for us is segmenting. So what we do is we look at all the sites that come in. Every time you guys sign up, we'll go through and look at your site within the first 24 hours. We'll look at the overall quality of the content. Is it original? Is it PG? We'll look at the design of your site. We'll look at, is there a lot of user-generated content? And then based on that, we segment your site and put it into sort of an elite, premium, or different tiers in our marketplace. And the end result of that is, you know, brand advertisers are really looking to align themselves with quality sites, and performance advertisers are really looking to align themselves with sites that can drive a high level of conversions, which is usually above the fold ad placements.
And then if I'm a newcomer to the network, how does AdBrite help me get started?
I think we have a lot of online tools. So again, it goes into the different sizes. We have dedicated account management. I think service is the big differentiator across all ad networks today. We hear it from everybody. The ad networks that provide the highest level of service are the ones that are sort of growing and becoming partners. So one is working with your account manager, asking them, what are the tips and tricks to generate higher revenue? We work with 50,000 sites. We know what works and what does not work. Placement is number one. You've got to, you know, once you put the ads up, you're becoming a media business. Internet's the only medium out there that does not interrupt the experience of the user. TV, radio, print, we all interrupt the experience. So we're very passive on the internet with our banner ads, and it's important that you put it front and center, that it's by navigational links. And what I, you know, Google heat map for advertisers, and there's a great number one search result will show you a heat map of exactly where to put your ads. That works.
Okay. And that leads us to Rhett. Affiliate marketing might kind of seem like an outlier to this panel, but I think that there are some pretty close connections. And so I'm wondering if you could kind of help us understand where affiliate marketing fits into this mix, but then also another part of your role is doing the online marketing for backcountry. And so if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what you've learned about advertising as well.
Yeah, sure. Can I get a show of hands of the folks who know really what affiliate marketing is? So the most of you, I'll sum it up real quick. It's a rev share arrangement where you get paid for the referral of traffic that converts, and you get paid a percentage of the sale. And there's two, you know, real distinctions within the affiliate relationship that are really appealing to backcountry.com. And the first one is that affiliate marketing creates a very long-term relationship between the two parties. Our finding is that you as a site owner, you have access to your analytics, you know your community, you know the purpose of your site, you know better than the advertiser where it is that we fit in to your fold. And the fact that it's a rev share, both people have equal stakes in the arrangement. So it creates something that you can build on over time. It doesn't happen overnight. It certainly isn't a get rich quick concept. It's something where you find a good relationship with what it is that you're trying to do online within your community and how that translates into the world of e-commerce. Another aspect of the affiliate marketing relationship that really makes sense is that you post whatever it is you want, whether it's a banner, a text link, a data feed, a snippet generator, at your discretion, where you want to display it on the ad or on your page and for how long. And, you know, you control the overall look and feel 100% on your site. Whereas compared, I also manage the direct media portion of what we do at Backcountry. And in that regard, I, as the advertiser, am determining what it is that's going to display, where it's going to display, and for how long. Otherwise, I won't pay for it. The affiliate relationship takes that and like I say, makes it a two-way street where you can build something of significance over time, much bigger than what I consider, you know, a shot in the arm for the advertiser on a specific campaign.
And kind of a parallel question to what I asked Jim, when someone's thinking about what affiliate programs to work with, what are some of the things that they should keep in mind?
Each company has a different take on how they manage the affiliates. Some people are very restrictive with what they'll allow affiliates to do. It really is a representation of your brand. And the way we view it is the affiliates in our program are an outside sales force, taking back all the way to before the internet, with Tupperware program, for example. It's a referral program that that really makes sense, in terms of both parties, winning and having a stake in it.
Okay. And another follow-up question for you. AdBright's adding 1,000, new people a day. How do you choose, or do you choose, who you work with?
Yeah, very good question. Yep. And a lot of affiliate programs, are very selective. And I would say that those are the best to be in. The way we choose affiliates is they have to have something, some value add to the audience. A lot of things that work well within the outdoor space and the gear realm are things like comparison shopping, where you have kind of a commodity item, a backpack, and the affiliate gives you multiple options from multiple merchants, and you can compare on price or quality, or lots of different. It basically makes it easier for them to solve the need. A lot of other affiliates do gear reviews, so they put their own personal input into their take on that product and guiding you into the right choice. Some affiliates take a totally different stance, and they'll do routes, for example, for hiking trips. And so they build their content around destinations and around little secret spots. And then, by the way, here's some gear that'll make your trip or your adventure that much more pleasant, or that much more bearable. So there's certainly a lot of different ways. And I urge you to find something that you're really passionate about, and look at the merchants that represent that and the access to whatever it is that helps you get at, in our case, it's gear.
Okay. And one more.
Sure.
When we were talking previously, you mentioned kind of an interesting experiment that you're working on to make the affiliate sales spill out of the internet and into the real world. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. It kind of speaks to the fact that affiliate marketers now are really charged with being innovative and finding new ways to drive sales through this external sales force. What we're playing with right now in the outdoor space, there's a lot of events that go on offline, whether it's ski competitions or the snowboarding events and that sort of thing. What we're doing is allowing affiliates to take their tracking mechanism and bring it offline. So we have affiliate athletes, for example, who go to the events whether they're competing or not, and they have we work together and we create branded pre-printed postcards or business cards that either have a link with the tracking source in the URL, the number that represents their account, or it takes them to a specific landing page that we only gave them access to, so that we can track and pay out commissions and credit for all the referrals that initiated on that landing page.
Can I add something to that?
Yeah, totally.
Because that kind of partnership that you can get with an affiliate merchant is really, really important. But as a publisher, they're not just going to hand that to you. You have to go to the affiliate manager and ask for it. If you really believe in a product, send them an email. I can't tell you how many times I didn't do that. But then when I did, the response that I got, you can get custom coupon codes. You can get special landing pages. And they need to know that you want that and need that and are willing to be a partner with them. In fact, the reason that I write for entrepreneur.com right now is because I reached out to their affiliate manager. So I just kind of wanted to throw that in there, because that's really, really important. And honestly, it can open up a lot more doors to you than you might realize.
Well, let's talk more about that. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm such a failure at online advertising on my blog is because I signed up for it and left it alone. What have people learned in terms of how to manage the relationships that they have with the ad networks, with the affiliates? What are some other things that people need to keep in mind? Anyone can. This is the point where we just go free form.
I'd say one of the things we see with newbie sites is they're very picky about the ads that run on their site. They really want a good brand advertiser, and they would much rather choose a big brand advertiser than that flashy type of ad. So we give you the choice, but the flashy ads convert a lot better. The brand ones do well, but they're CPM. If you look at Lower My Bills or Netflix and a lot of these top CPA online advertisers.
Does everyone know what those acronyms mean? Okay.
CPA is cost per action or cost per acquisition. And the way in which advertisers are tracking this, there's a good question.
And so CPM would be cost per thousand people seeing the ad, and CPC would be cost per click.
Thank you. Okay. The newbie is important, yes. You know, one of the things that ad networks give the advertisers is it's a little piece of code, a pixel essentially, that the advertiser will put onto their website after a user completes the action they wanted. So for example, Netflix is looking to get people to click on a banner ad and then to sign up for a subscription. They put their credit card in, they sign up. On the sign up page, they put a little piece of code that the ad network gives them, a pixel, so we can see how many people signed up. And then what we can do is we can track that conversion, that sign up, back to the individual site where the user clicked on the ad, as well as we can even track it back to sites where they viewed the ad but did not click. And so what happens is the networks are able to go back to the advertiser, in this case, a Netflix, for example, and say, you know, it was ProBlogger that led to 18 conversions. And even though you spent, you know, $100 on ProBlogger, your cost per acquisition was, you know, X dollars, you know, $5 or so. Mm-hmm. And then if, you know, their goal is to do that in, you know, $10, they will want to increase that budget. So, those are the tools that they're using. But I think, you know, being picky with the ads is definitely a limitation. One final thought there is there's a big shift. You know, even AdBright, we used to be all about selling by site. We would group your sites together by vertical and say, here's a bunch of music blogs, and then go out to the ad community and sell it that way. Today, what's happening is you're seeing a lot more user targeting. So it's not about necessarily seeing contextual ads on your blog. It's advertisers saying, I want to reach users in Austin who are 18 to 24 and who are male. And when you see that user, show my ad. And they're willing to pay a premium to do that.
What are anything else that other people have learned about how to manage the relationships well, or if you're not getting what you want out of a program, how to get more out of it?
I'd just like to say that the affiliate managers out there, that is their sole purpose for the company, is to communicate with the affiliates. And they really work hard to create those relationships. And it kind of goes back to the long-term focus. Any affiliate that responds in kind and engages in the relationship will get the attention and the resources to make them successful. But it has to be a two-way street. It certainly is not a push mechanism. You have to work together. And when you do, you come up with really innovative ways to integrate the commerce within the content in a way that that can be transparent and act as a resource for your audience, to which they'll really appreciate it. And then you get compensated for providing a resource versus tricking them into clicking on something or something that's unrelated to the content or the purpose of your site.
Darren?
I think one of the things that I found really helpful, the more you know about what works on your site, the more you can give information to whether it be an ad network, an affiliate network, or a direct advertiser. So I would say do as much tracking of the conversions of ads, where people are clicking. So you can use a tool like Crazy Egg. It's a free tool which creates a heat map of where people are clicking on your site. So you can see there's a really hot zone right underneath my posts above the comments. That's where people, they get to the end of the post. They want something to do, so they click an ad. So knowing where ads are converting and where they're not converting can be really helpful, because when an advertiser comes to you and they say, I want to buy a banner ad on your site and I'm willing to pay this much, you can turn around to them and say, well, how about you put an ad at the bottom of my post, because this is the results I'm getting. And you can actually charge them more for the privilege of knowing that information. So the more you can tell advertisers, ad networks, affiliate networks about what works for you, what type of readers you have. So do some surveys of, you know, who's reading your blog, where are they from, how old are they, what are they interested in, are they buyers or are they just researching? The more information you can tell like that, the more relevant the ads and the affiliate programs can be, and the better they'll be in terms of success.
something that I can add to that is that it actually can be a little bit of a frustrating process trying to gather that information, because especially as a newer publisher, you don't have the traffic and the volume to be able to create these kind of benchmarks to figure out what works and what doesn't. And it's just going to take time to have to learn that. And I cannot stress more strongly enough that it really is very valuable information when you're first starting out. To Darren's point about that hotspot, I used to have in my old template a great little spot that was in the text. It was just a tiny little ad that I thought people would love to click on. So I put an AdSense ad in there. It's just one little unit, and nobody clicked on the AdSense at all. I don't think I ever got one click on it. But when I put an ad for my own product there, people clicked on it like crazy. It was still a text ad. It still looked the same. But the fact that it was my product, my audience, they don't care about AdSense ads. They cared about what I could offer them as a free value ad. So it's not just the placement. It's what you're putting in the placement. And it's only going to take time and experimentation in order to find out what works. But I tell you, now I can sell that ad, like you said, for a premium, because I know what works in that exact spot.
Well, a couple of people... Yeah.
I'm live blogging this, and I have a couple questions from the internet for you all to ask. At the Affiliate Summit about 2 weeks ago, Jason Calacanis gave a keynote that pissed off pretty much every affiliate marketer in the face of the earth. And one of the topics that came up was disclosure. Disclosing your ads and your affiliate links. And the other question is how affiliate managers and affiliate networks pick the affiliates. It came up as one of the hardest jobs. So if you guys could address those.
Could you rephrase the first part as a question? I'm not sure.
Where do you stand on disclosing of ads and affiliate links on your various properties?
And that's the thing.
I guess it's mostly to Wendy and Darren.
Okay.
For me, it varies from site to site a little. So I have one site which is getting a lot of search engine traffic. And those people are there to buy digital cameras. Like, they come to the site researching digital cameras. I have a site-wide disclosure on that site, just saying there are affiliate programs here. The ads are all clearly labeled, but I don't, next to every link that I do to Amazon, I don't put this is an affiliate link. On a blog like ProBlogger, which is much more about building a community and building trust with my readers, almost always will put a little app for affiliate program after a link to affiliate program, because I want my readers there to know what they're doing, that I'm benefiting from it. And I find on that site that the affiliate links actually perform better when I do give that disclosure, because my readers like me and they want to give me some money. You know, I've been giving them some information and they'll go, well, I could go directly to the site, or I could give Darren 10% commission on it. So for me, it depends a little on the site as to the type of disclosure that I do, but I always try and do it in some way.
That actually is a great question. Thanks for bringing it up, Tris, for whoever it was that asked it. Oh, Sam. I know that name. Excellent.
Are you Tris Hussey? Hello. I've never met Tris.
I actually never really thought about disclosure at first, because of how I personally approached affiliate marketing, is that I never did a sponsored review. I never pushed a product. I never sold anything unless I was willing to write about it for free. And I would say that here and there on the site, but I just kind of assumed that because that was the way that I ran my business, that people would know that, because I said it at some point. And I realized that people don't assume that. People assume the worst. So I'm actually starting to try to put more disclosure in place, just so that people know that. And actually, it's interesting to know that when you disclose that, and that's a back and forth thing. So I never really thought about it because of the way I approached it. And my guess is that most of the people in the room would probably approach it the same way. And you have to realize this is not your approach that matters. It's what the reader thinks when they come to the site that matters. And that's a completely different ballgame. And they're not going to assume that you're doing it just because you'd write about it for free or because you really, really like the product. Because there are a lot of people out there who will write really, really great stuff about really, really crappy products. So that disclosure is important for that reason in and of itself.
And that brings up something that Darren had mentioned in terms of the paid reviews or the pay per post. Could either of you've had some thoughts about it. Could either of you kind of share your perspective on that?
I don't write comment for payment. I can understand why a lot of bloggers would write a review and pay for it, because there's some good money out there to be made from it. And again, I think it comes back to the type of site that you're writing. My worry with paid reviews is that people begin to question your motives. A lot of bloggers write every third post is a paid review, and they seem to like a lot of the things that they're writing about. I think transparency is really important with it. And for me, it's about, I guess my theory is everything I put on my site not only is useful or not useful for my readers, but it says something about me. And I'm wanting to build a site that people come back to not only tomorrow, but for years to come. So I just want to put out genuinely helpful information. So I think if a paid review can be helpful to your audience and if it's relevant to your audience, then it can be okay. But I just choose not to do it.
And that gets back to what Wendy was saying about if I would have written this for free.
Yeah. And actually, I did experiment with paid reviews, and I really felt like I was anal retentive about what I reviewed. I mean, turned away probably 80% of the requests that I got. And I probably did, I mean, a small handful of them. And I know that I did a good job, and I made them interesting, and I made them relevant. You know what? I don't want to do them anymore. And if I do ever again, it's going to be on a separate blog for that very reason, is that people, they just don't like their advertorials mixed with their content that they love. I mean, again, let me caveat that with on my blog. You know, there might be other blogs where it works better, but, you know, it's just disclosure, you know, it's there every time. It just doesn't matter. I mean, people just don't respond to it the same as they do when you're writing from the heart.
Can I mention something? Yeah. We have a gear review program through our affiliate network, and we fully encourage the reviewer to tell it like it is. We have lots of different products to choose from. If it's a bad product, write it, but also give something constructive to what is the alternative solution for it. We would just assume the person not buy the product that you're, you know, targeting if it isn't going to suit their needs. There's lots of options, lots of alternatives, you know. You can turn it into a positive way. It doesn't always, at least from our perspective, it doesn't have to be a glowing review just because you want to convert. And in fact, we endorse the true story.
And you know, just like restaurant reviews online, sometimes people will read something negative but still go or still buy.
Everybody's
it because
interpretation
it'll meet their
is
needs.
Different. Yeah. Application, absolutely.
I have one more question for the panel as moderator, and then we're going to open it up to you guys. Purely going to the mic in the middle of the room there, so line up if you have something to say. But my last question is, several people have used the word tracking, and so I want to talk a little bit about measurements and metrics. How do you gauge the success of what you're doing? How do you weigh things against each other and kind of improve the overall mix? What numbers should people be looking at? It's kind of a curveball. We haven't talked about that before. Anyone?
Sure, I can jump in there. On the ad network side, there's two types of measurement. One is looking at how the performance of the ad was. Performance meaning how many people clicked on the banner or the text ads and how many people actually signed up or purchased the action. On the flip side, the other side is when we work with, you know, the Verizons and AT&Ts of the world, it is a little bit more of a quality metric. And one thing I'd mentioned to all of you is really think about the domain name and URL you use for your blog. When we go out in front of agencies and we do, you know, 50 meetings, you know, every week with the sales team, the only question the agencies ask is, can you show me a site list of where my ads will run? They don't go to the actual sites. So when we show them domain names that are clean and simple and very professional looking, they go, great, that's exactly where we want our ads. And then UGC, user generated content, you know, monitor it, keep it professional. You're running a media business. So in terms of analytics, quality is subjective. So for the brand guys, run a high quality professional site. And for the Netflixes of the world, put the ads in a good spot because they're going to look at every analytic in terms of clicks and conversions.
Anyone else?
I can throw in there kind of from the publisher perspective is that, you know, there's obviously Google Analytics. There are tools like Crazy Egg, Hittail that I use a lot. One of actually the ones that I've found to be the most effective, and I know that this data is now in Google Analytics, I believe, but I still can't figure out how to pull this data, is to find on what people clicked on. And the only tool that I've found that where I can get that is in the pro version of my blog log. Now, pro being $3 a month. So trust me, it's worth it. Because one of the things that that allows you to see is my blog log.
MYBLOGLOG?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm usually astonished and to find what people click on, and it's not usually what I think that they're going to click on. I wrote a post about 10 different kinds of home businesses that you can start, business models that you can start. And the most popular one out of all of them, which really blew my mind, was starting up a VA business. Well, I hadn't actually given two thoughts to it. It was actually just kind of one I threw in because I needed 10 because it was a top 10 post.
And what's a VA business?
Oh, a virtual assistant business, starting a virtual assistant business. And the interest in that was extraordinary. I mean, we sent these two sites thousands of visitors. And so that kind of data leads me to go, oh, well, you know what? There's more interest there. Maybe I should find a VA to start writing on my blog kind of thing. So that click data is really, really important.
Okay, going to the floor.
Are we on?
Okay. Hi. I guess I have amnesia. I blogged about something 2 days ago about click-throughs. There was an internet marketing study that was released last month claiming that people who do heavy click-throughs are not a demographically desirable segment of the population. And it seemed pretty damning to me. I was wondering what your thoughts are. And just a kind of a personal dilemma unrelated to that. I work on a site that's sort of an ebook technology site, and I'm trying to set up advertising. My partner refuses to get involved in it at all, and he wants me to do the work, and I'm trying to convince him that it's not too hard and it doesn't compromise your integrity. How can I make the case to him that it's not going to suck up his time?
Well, on the first part of the question, so the report you're referring to, I think, was a study done by Takoda and Yahoo that found that 50% of ads were clicked on by 6% of the audience or something like that, and that 6% were largely male, young, underemployed, and poor. And the first thing that struck me was that you always kind of have to consider the source of research. I mean, I'm a research manager for DoubleClick, and we really try to be as objective as we can. And when looking at that report, I mean, their methodology was solid. They had a stellar brand partner in Yahoo. But Takoda is a business that specializes in behavioral targeting. And so the purpose for that report was to show that if you're advertising to all people in all places, your ads are going to underperform because you're going to hit people that you don't want to hit, that 6% of underemployed men. But if you use behavioral targeting, which is what Takoda provides, you can better target your ads and reach more people. And so I think that that's really the nut that I got out of that study. Not that online ads don't work because you're hitting people who can't buy things, but that there are different ways to approach different business needs. Does anyone else have any response? In terms of the second part, how to convince your friend to work with you, I'm going to punt and default to the panel.
It's easy. The ad networks make it very easy. All of them do. Pop a piece of JavaScript into your site and you're done. And then if you want to take control, leverage an ad network that gives that to you.
Okay, next question.
Cool, just had a comment and a question. One thing about brand advertising is that it does not necessarily about click-throughs. We've done studies at Nielsen Online that ad effectiveness, if someone's like brand advertising something like razor blades, you actually want them to go and pick that up at the supermarket, not necessarily click-through. So that's another way you can sort of promote your brand. Secondly, the question was, say in New Zealand, we were setting up an ad network with a whole lot of small websites. Buy versus build the technology behind it and do places like AdBrite white label their system, because we don't want to target the whole world. We just want to really target kind of New Zealand-based consumers and advertisers.
In terms of white labels, we do not do white labels. I missed the first part of the question. A little bit hard.
Someone was leaving and the door clacked.
The idea of a white label, the reason why we don't do this is we think, having the largest marketplace is the key to you monetizing your sites. So the more advertisers bidding and having demand to run on your pages, the higher your revenue is going to be. Sort of an eBay type mentality.
Yeah, I guess we're geo-targeting to New Zealand, which is 4 million people, as opposed to worldwide. They're quite targeted sites in New Zealand.
Correct. The ad networks, geo-targeting is a key part of all ad networks. We have advertisers around the world that will sign up. I logged in today from my hotel room looking at one of my AdBrite zones and noticed that the ad was for Austin Singles. So we have advertisers. A lot of the ad networks have advertisers that will have specific targeting just for New Zealand or Australia. So it's really finding the largest ad network that's going to have the biggest breadth of advertisers.
And just to kind of respond to your comment, there's a lot of different things that people need to keep in mind when they start advertising online, just in terms of what your business or marketing goal is. If you're looking for brand, click-through rate might not be the metric that you look at, but you know, video completion rate, time spent in ad, interaction rate, if it's a rich media ad, you know, are metrics that you should be considering more actively versus the direct response metrics. So the question was, what tools do people use to measure performance? Can people just talk a little bit about what they use for their analytics?
I think most ad networks give you reasonable data on that. You can use some tools that Google Analytics has that will allow you to track particular clicks and things like that. But I, personally, I don't do a lot of that. I just look at what the bottom dollar value is and CPM values and click-through rates, so that, which is what all ad networks will give you. So, yeah, I find most of the ad networks give you some pretty good stats these days.
The affiliate networks do the same. So the affiliates have an interface that gives you access to all the links that come through, that goes through their click servers and such. And there's quite a bit of data in the affiliate network, where that would be Commission Junction, Linkshare, Performix, AvantLink, some small niche affiliate networks as well.
Okay, back to the microphone. Next question.
Hey there, I'm Kellis Landrum. I run art and design blog out in Los Angeles, and a lot of our traffic and our content comes through the art scene, the design scene in LA. And I've only been familiar with affiliate programs in terms of Amazon, but if I'm understanding what you guys are talking about, I'm kind of interested in how we can approach companies to be an affiliate, how to find the right person to talk to in an organization, how to come and talk to them like we know what we're talking about, what they would expect from us, things like that.
And you mean companies that don't already have an affiliate program?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not really familiar with how affiliate programs work,
okay,
or you know, what kinds of companies have them, how to find who those people are.
I think you'd be amazed at how many companies have affiliate networks. There's merchants in you know, nearly every vertical that that offer this. The best way, and it's nice for affiliates, it's entirely free to apply to a network of your choice. There's a lot of different reasons why you'd choose one network or over the other, whether it's a specialty or you're going after the largest collection of merchants possible. Mm-hmm. As soon as you apply to the network, you within the interface you have lists that you know, go pages long of all the merchants that are within that network. After you've gotten accepted into the network, you apply to each merchant individually. Those affiliate managers go through those applications daily, look at your site, see whether it's going to be a good fit for their brand. As soon as they accept you, then you get complete access to all the creative that they've put into the network, whether it be the banners, the data feeds, the text links, and all that. And like I say, then you apply that at your discretion. But it really is, once you're in the door, then you know, you use it to your benefit.
Two other things. One, search Google for affiliate program,
okay,
and your topic. You'll be surprised what you find. And two, we've had some success with going directly to companies who don't have them and getting them to set it up. If you can create a good enough argument, then you can do it. The other way is just to go for them for sponsorship.
Yeah, Commission Junction, Linkshare, and Performix are the three largest ones. In our space, AvantLink, and there's a lot of niche, smaller networks that have focus within specific verticals, but those three you know, cover the gamut of industry.
And that niche aspect, I think, is important to think about in terms of ad networks as well. AdBright's an example of kind of a general ad network, and we're seeing the formation of a lot more vertical niche-specific ad networks, like Black Entertainment Television has an ad network. Martha Stewart is now managing an ad network. A lot of people, Girls Media. There are a lot of niche networks that you should also consider, as well as the broader network. BET, Martha Stewart, Real Girls Media. Oh, the affiliates. Sorry.
Yeah, Commission Junction, Linkshare, and Performix.
We kind of mixed that. There are two different kind of ad networks that we were talking about here, because you're talking about affiliate networks, and the names that you just dropped were CPM networks. So these are the affiliate networks are the ones that pay on a commission. The CPM networks are the ones that basically pay for when you have your page viewed. Completely different. There's actually, I do want to drop Adify, adify.com is basically, it's a network of networks, and there's some really strong niches in there. I have to say a little about their user interface, not so good, but their ad networks are great, and Martha Stewart is one that runs through there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next question.
Hi. This session is very blogger heavy, like concentrated on monetizing blogs. Can you say something about monetization and advertising in, like, from the perspective of, say, like a dating site or a site that makes its business providing MySpace layouts or emoticons or that sort of thing, where it's, you know, maybe a social network or a dating site or like MySpace layout site?
Sure, I can jump in there. Some of our largest publishers are MySpace layouts, or at least in one of our verticals. That audience is typically very different. It would not respond as well to an affiliate offer. And usually, I'm guessing you're seeing a high volume of unique users. Lots of users, lots of page views. So I think there the key is finding an ad network that has rich technology to target down to each user individually. Because I think the users themselves might be more valuable than targeting the MySpace layout community. Just depends. But reaching those users who are in New York City and are a teenager, et cetera, sometimes has higher value. So find a network that can target down to the user. AdBright does it. There's others out there. And contextual is probably not going to be your play, because there's not a lot of content to scan on that page. And then when they do, the ads for the MySpace community sites are not super valuable.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, we have 5 minutes left, so we'll try to get in as many questions as we can.
I'll make mine quick. Can any of the panelists talk about various threshold levels, especially for newbies that at a particular traffic level hits, et cetera, per month, don't even think about advertising beyond that level? Up to a certain level, you should really be focusing on network, affiliates, et cetera. And above that level, you really ought to be looking for advertising yourself. So can you mention them some numbers? And if you would, just emphasize what metric you would be using when you throw those numbers out. Thanks.
I can maybe not give you an answer that you want to hear, but it depends on the niche. You know, I know that Real Girls Media, when they're looking for publishers, they don't ask about your page views. They really want to know if you're a great partner for their advertisers that they know. So there's that answer. I know that there's been a number kind of floated around in the blogosphere. It was that if you're going to sell ads directly, you probably need about 500 unique visitors a day before a direct advertiser will really start to look at you. And these are usually the smaller advertisers, not the big brands like Disney or Nextel or something like that. You know, they're not going to care about your 500 unique visitors. That's some benchmarks to go on.
I'd say my theory is put ads on from day one. Because if you start putting ads on once you hit 1,000, your users will push back.
Yeah.
I just build a blog with the culture that I want to have down the track. So even if it's just a generic kind of ad. But I also say when you've got a small blog, target small advertisers. So I found when I started my first photography blog, I started targeting local Australian retailers of cameras, and I was surprised how many wanted to advertise. And it created that culture. And it started to bring an income from day, 3 months in, pretty much.
Okay, we're going to take one more question, and then for the rest of you, we'll hang out in the hall afterward to address your needs. Yes?
I'm listening to what you say and considering whether or not a regional economy that would be an ad network for shopping local might be a successful business for me to start. And I wonder if you're very familiar with the World Wide Web and more of the major advertisers. Do you think there are other cities that have examples of regional ad networks that work?
I don't know about any regional ad networks, but I do know that local search is becoming particularly popular and successful now, and so I'd be surprised if there weren't also local contextual opportunities.
Thank you.
For text ads. Does anyone else have any insight in terms of
I've
regional?
I've done quite well in the Australian market. So even just using AdSense can convert quite well in that. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity there because a lot of people go for the global and people want to search locally for that information. So, yeah.
I can throw out one name for you. There's a company in Chicago that has built their ad media business on buying local ads. It's called Cenveo, C-E-N-V-E-O. And they buy ads for large agencies at in local levels. To your point, I think Google search basically is kind of mostly the way to go.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for coming. That's a wrap. Appreciate it.